Welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich.
And I'm Jen.
And today we are going to round out season two of A View from the Couch. This is tax season, and as such, we should, of course, be talking about an accountant at some point. So we are talking about The Accountant, starring Ben Affleck.
Yes.
Yeah. So what other movies can you think of that star a person, not star, but feature an accountant that is also a hitman?
I don't know that I know any other ones.
I can't think of one either. I can't think of one either. And so I think that this is kind of a unique film in that respect. I know there have been plenty of movies where it's like, he's this person by day, but he's a hitman by night.
Right.
You know, this has been done before, but never with an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like accounting is like, sorry, it's such a boring thing. Like, it's like,
it is not.
Bang,
it's
your
fun.
Head against the wall, boring.
No, it's not.
Come on, man. Nothing really exciting happens in accounting, right?
I love accounting. Like,
you can
it
love
is
the numbers.
So
I'm saying,
much fun
okay.
to do that.
You
and
get
you
like
get to talk to
rush.
Lots of different people. And okay. yes, you're not out shooting things and you
no,
being crazy, but it's fun. And there's a lot of crazy stuff that happens. And there's a lot of, you know, busyness to it. And
yeah
it's not for everybody because
right.
not everybody's a number person, but there are a lot of jobs out there that I would absolutely despise that a lot of people like doing. So
that's
it's just being an accountant isn't for you, but thankfully it is for a lot of us out there that do enjoy working with numbers.
Whatever dwindling numbers there are of the accountants that are still out in the world.
Yeah, unfortunately it is a profession that we have more people retiring out of than coming into it. So
you're a dying breed, as they say.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie is a movie that we showed to your employees
mm-hmm.
1 year for like a team building thing or something.
We
right
just, we just did it for
and,
you know
yeah
I don't know just to
shits
do
and giggles.
Something you got to do stuff sometimes that's not necessarily work related or whatever, just to kind of chill. It was definitely not during tax season. It was
right.
in our slower time, and we're like, let's bring in some popcorn and snacks, and
love
we're just
gonna
sit and watch a movie today.
Okay, so let me ask you this: do you think that any of your employees were inspired to become hit people from this movie, because then they could like hide it through their accountancy and stuff?
I don't think so, although there was one there that's no longer with us that maybe that person. I don't know.
Okay, so off the mic, you're going to have to tell me about who that person is that you think, and we're not going to mention who it
No, we're not. We're not going to talk about
here,
that.
But yeah, okay. So, all right. So we had seen this movie. Did we go to the theaters to see this movie? I think we did.
Oh, yeah,
yeah
we
I
did.
Like
I was
did.
Like, I want to go see this.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this makes my accounting business look good. This makes me look good as an accountant. I want to go see this movie.
I mean, I knew this wasn't going to be like real life accountant stuff, but you know, it's still called The Accountant. There was still going to be some of that in there. And you don't get a lot of accounting movies. And I understand why. It's not like something exciting to see on the big screen.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
So I was excited for this. I was like, cool. This is awesome.
Were you hoping that you would see some scenes where like they would like calculate some stuff and it would like tie out perfectly and you'd be like, oh, yeah, fucking bravo. Bravo.
It's like porn for accountants.
Yeah. Right.
It balances. Woohoo.
Yeah. Shit. Anyway, we've seen this movie before. I goof on it, but I goof on you because that's
yeah,
what
you
we do.
Do.
You know, we goof on each other. It's fun. So why don't we do this? Let's just get into the cast and crew, mm-hmm. and then we'll jump into the story itself.
So this movie was directed by Gavin O'Connor. I don't know that name. Do you?
Gavin O'Connor. I don't know the name very well either,
okay.
but in my research, I found out that he did another movie with Ben Affleck later about basketball or something.
Oh, okay. All right.
I just don't know him very well.
Okay. It was written by Bill Dubuque. It stars Ben Affleck as Christian Wolf, Anna Kendrick as Dana Cummings, J.K. Simmons as Ray King. I love J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons, again.
John Bernthal as Brax. Cynthia Adai Robinson as Mary Beth, and John Lithgow as Lamar Blackburn.
Who's Mary Beth?
She is the one that's working with J.K. Simmons' character. Like, he's grooming her to replace him.
Oh, Medina?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mary Beth Medina, I think. But I think they just call her Medina.
Yeah, they do just call her Medina. I just, that's...
That's probably why, yeah. It's that's why Mary Beth Medina.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't figure out. I was like, who the hell is Mary Beth? What? I don't understand that. Yeah.
All right, should we get into the story of this?
Well, first, so Bill Dubuque, I didn't know that name either, but apparently this is the guy that created Ozark, the TV show
really?
Ozark. Yeah.
That was a good show.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know anything previous, and I guess this movie maybe catapulted him into being able to have the currency to do that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, kudos, because Ozark was a fantastic series.
I thought it wasn't it like Breaking Bad, but with a family of criminals instead? Or what was like?
Kind of. I mean, it was a money laundering thing.
Hmm.
They kind of got tied into this money laundering, and then they were trying to get out and couldn't get out. And there's so many wonderful characters. People are good and bad and mixed, and it's just a great series.
So not quite the same as Breaking Bad.
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right. Let's talk about the accountant, though.
Okay. So young Christian Wolf is on the autism spectrum, and his mother wants him to be sent to a treatment center called Harbor Neuroscience. His father, though, does not agree with that. He wants to teach the boy how to quote-unquote tough it out, and has just that opportunity when Christian's mother has had enough and abandons the family.
This is kind of a rough opening.
Neither parent is very good here,
no.
Right?
No. Like, both terrible parents.
Yeah, like the mom abandoning the kids because the dad won't do... Take the kids with you.
Yeah.
Why would you leave the kids?
I don't know. It could be an abusive thing, though, where he's like, if you take the kids, I'm going to, you know...
Maybe.
...hunt you down and whatever. Who knows? Who knows what it is? Definitely, she shouldn't have done that. But then the dad is... really
asshole.
Not okay either.
He is a complete prick. He's going to he's going to make him quote unquote man up and face the thing and blah, blah, blah. He's going to cure autism by making him just act normal. Come on. Really?
This is like pretty high level child abuse. I'm pretty sure. It's just like, my God.
Yeah. Because, okay. So he's in the military and he starts training Christian and Christian's brother Braxton in like all these different martial arts. He has people that come in to like fight with them, mm-hmm. and teach them how to like use that in combat. And I'm like, what are you training these kids for?
And it's not just even like learning the martial arts. Like, he's having these instructors like actually draw blood from his kids. Like,
beat
actually,
the piss out of them.
Yeah. And they're kids. They're little kids. And the instructor wants to stop. He's like, that's enough. We're done. We'll bring it back. And the dad's, no, we're doing it, you know?
Yeah, we're done when I say we're done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't like this dad. He's a dick.
He is a dick. He's a complete dick. He further abuses Christian by like not teaching him how to, you know, live in a world with his autism.
Mm-hmm.
He's just teaching him to like basically, he teaches him to, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that are like, brr. Instead of teaching him constructive ways to handle it, he teaches him how to like normalize all of this stimulus mm-hmm. out there, right? Mm-hmm. So like, he's not out there avoiding the things that cause like breakdowns for him. Breakdowns in his routine, I guess, is what I meant. He's teaching him to... I don't know. I feel like there's some good intent there,
mm-hmm.
but the way that he went about it.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think there's the intent, like you said, is good. But when you have a situation like that, and the child has a stressful situation, you know, the dad's solution is make it worse, and he just has to deal with it.
Yeah,
you just have to cope with it. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstrap type attitude, you know?
Puts him into an even worse situation to try and get him to focus on stuff.
Now, you could say that this probably worked out in Christian's favor when he's an adult.
Did it? Because he's a contract killer.
I don't know. But he definitely has issues he still needs to work through. And I'm going to say right now, I apologize if I misspeak on something. I am not educated with Asperger's syndrome and autism. I just know what I know about it. And so if I speak incorrectly, I apologize on this. But it seems to me like there's better ways to help Christian cope with stressful situations.
Right.
And I feel like he did not grow up in a loving environment at all.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Except for his brother. His brother obviously loves him. But his brother has...
Because his brother keeps calling him freak and all kinds of shit when he sees him later. So I don't know.
He does, but I think there's a lot of anger there from stuff that's happened in the past.
He blames Christian for the mom leaving.
Yeah. And for the dad dying.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like he loves him, but he also was brought up in a bad situation.
Oh, yeah. He was abused as well.
He was also abused. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like he loves him in the way that he was raised and knows how to love him without ever learning other ways. I do think there is a connection there. It's not what we would call a healthy connection, but I do think it's there. Mm-hmm. But I don't think me saying that, you know, his brother loved him doesn't change the fact that he still did not grow up in a loving situation.
Right.
He did not have that at all growing up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So as an adult, Christian is the owner of XYZ Accounting in rural Illinois, where he both helps his clientele navigate the dizzying world of tax law and launders the money that is paid to him by his other clients, people who hire him as a hitman. He is contacted usually by an unnamed woman via the phone who keeps all of his business in order and schedules contracts for him and stuff like that. And it is this way that Christian is hired by Living Robotics to audit their firm when a lowly accountant named Dana Cummings discovers irregularities in their books. The company's CEO, Lamar Blackburn, and his sister Rita meet with Christian and explain what they're looking for. This is a neat scene. Mm-hmm. Christian is very, like, blunt, to the point, not really considering, you know, emotional anything, just saying it like it is.
Right, because I don't think he processes the human emotion aspect. So for him, it's just a matter of fact that this is what I need.
Right.
I don't care how you feel about it type of thing, you know?
Yeah, because at one point I think he implies that either Lamar or his sister could be the person that stole the money, and Lamar gets very upset about that. And Christian's just like, I mean, that's true, right? I mean, it could be you guys if we are looking into this and find that out. I wouldn't be surprised, I guess, is all I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
It's just interesting to see how other people react to Christian as well.
Yeah.
Like, Lamar is very intolerant of any of it. Mm-hmm. But Dana isn't very, like, combative. She's understanding and questions and stuff like that. But
well,
doesn't,
she's
like,
also
judge.
Not the one that's going to be on the hook for, I mean, you know, she's not an upper person that would be embezzling this money out of here either.
Right.
You know? So it is a different thing. Plus, she's the one that found it.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a little dynamic there. But I do think that she does see the coldness because I think she's trying to engage in conversation with him right away. And he's basically like, what are you doing here? You know, he basically says that to her.
Did you get the feeling that Dana was maybe on the spectrum as well?
No.
No?
No, but I think she was hoping to be able to be involved with that audit and help. I think she was looking to be a little more helpful with that.
See, I was worried that they were going to go with this whole, like, oh, she's on the spectrum too. And
I didn't get that at all.
I just felt kind of like maybe they were starting to lean that way. And then they were like, man, maybe not. There's just some comments that she makes about, like, numbers are great for me too and blah, blah, blah. Like,
okay, but that's an accounting thing though. Like, I love working with numbers too.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying, like, they were talking, and she is expressing sameness with him.
Yeah.
Probably not understanding that he has autism. I mean, it's not something that you come up and you're like, hello, my name is so-and-so, I have autism. You know, but it felt like, You know, and maybe that was the intent. Maybe the intent was to put that into an awkward situation where she's like, oh, I like numbers too. And she doesn't realize that she doesn't like numbers the way that he likes numbers.
Right, it's different.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a difference.
Right, like he's got this.
Yeah.
For him, you know, working on what he's working on, there is a balance to it and there's a finish to it. So, you know, you go through all these numbers and at the end, the thing should balance. And that's going to have a nice complete feeling for him.
Right.
Where it does for people probably like Dana too, because like me, when I get something to balance, sometimes if it's something I've been working on a long time, I will literally yell like, you know, yoo-hoo, you know, like to that type
yoo-hoo
of stuff.
Yoo-hoo or
yeah.
woo-hoo?
Yeah, whatever. So anyways, I'll yell because it's an exciting thing. It feels good. You just got this thing to work out and to balance. So for her, that's probably, I kind of relate more to her because like there's that. But for him, if it doesn't balance, that's, you know, maybe going to, you know, affect how he reacts. I don't know what it's called when they have a situation that's stressful and then they, I don't know if it's shutting down or having an episode. I don't know what it is. And I apologize that I don't know what that's called, but you know, he would be affected a lot more than she would. Because if she was off a little bit, she might be able to walk away with that and be okay.
Right. Yeah.
She'll be able to sleep at night.
There's not a walking away for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, we see that a couple of different times. I have to finish. He says, I have to finish.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And in fact, later when he's going to get kicked off of the audit, he's like, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
I got to finish what I've started here. So.
Right.
Yeah. So while they are having their introductions, Treasury Director Ray King meets with a data analyst named Medina, who lied on her application to get her job. She had a record as a juvenile, but King thinks that she could help him figure out the true identity of Christian Wolf, the man who that the Treasury Department has been tracking. Now, here's my question. Why is he looking for him? Because Wolf is feeding him information, and he's using that information. Eventually, he's going to try and get Medina to take on the mantle of the person that received the information from Christian Wolf. Why are they hunting him down?
So, I'm not really sure. I feel like it was a test to see if she could do this, because it was all kind of like an off the books type of thing. Like it wasn't an actual assignment by, you know, the upper people. It was just something he had her do.
But they go to his house with like a crew.
They do. At that point, they go with a crew. But I don't think, it was like an official investigation. I feel like he was testing her. That's how I took it, I guess.
I wonder if it was, maybe this is something that's like, that I missed in the couple of viewings that I've seen, or that has maybe made it onto the cutting room floor, but maybe it is a Treasury Department investigation that King is heading up, and he's going to run interference so that Wolf doesn't get caught.
I mean, that could be too.
And he's trying to recruit her at the same time?
Yeah.
That's a little confusing, and I didn't. If that's in there, I didn't catch it. I've seen it three times now.
I don't recall.
Yeah.
Them saying why.
Right.
He was doing it. I mean, I get it at first on first watch. You're like, oh, that's his job. He's trying to find this guy. But then when it comes out, the twist later, it's like, wait.
Why are you trying to find him? If he's feeding you information.
Yep.
You know. That's like going and finding Batman's identity when he's helping you fight crime. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do?
Right.
But if that's what they were going for, they should have explained that a little better, I think.
Yeah, they could have taken a couple minutes and been like, well, this is why I had you do that.
Yeah. So King is, like I said, about to retire. He wants Medina to kind of, he's going to put her through her paces, basically. She notices irregularities in the tax returns of several businesses in a strip mall in rural Illinois, which is the very same strip mall that houses Christian's accounting office. Meanwhile, Christian is scouring a decade's worth of financial information from Living Robotics, and he discovers a $61 million embezzlement. He tells Rita about the amount, but he doesn't know who the thief is, but I know that they took $61 million. Later that night, hitmen break into the house of CFO Ed Chilton and force him to overdose on his insulin.
Mm-hmm.
This makes it appear as if Chilton was the thief, and the next morning, Lamar pays the remainder of Christian's contract and tells him, hey, the audit's over. This is what causes him to not be okay with that.
Now, right, and this is where, so he's got this weird routine at night where he plays loud music. Mm-hmm. Isn't there a strobe light or something in there, too?
There's a strobe light, loud music, and he's got this bar, this wooden bar that
this
he rubs
bar
against
thing
his shins.
That he's rubbing on his shins, which I've seen stuff like that before. It's like to, it's like works out knots and muscles and stuff. But after the audit gets called off, he starts hitting himself with this thing.
Yeah.
And it is, I can't, I watched it the first time. I haven't watched this scene since then. Mm. I look away because I can't watch that. That was, that's tough.
See, this is why I think the dad was a schmuck.
Yeah.
Like if he had gone to this neuroscience place, mm-hmm. they could have maybe helped him figure this out.
Right.
They could have given him like more constructive tools, ways to handle yeah. it. But dad's like, you got to beat the shit out of anything that's irregular.
Yeah.
You know? Including yourself if you're having like, you know,
right.
if you're being triggered by something.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, like that dad was such a fucking prick, man.
Yeah.
I can't stand parents like that. That night, hitmen come to try and kill Christian, but he kills all of them but one. And then the captured hitman reveals that his next target is Dana Cummings. So Christian goes to Dana's apartment and he arrives just in time to kill the hitmen who were sent to take her out. And then he takes off with her, takes her to his storage unit. He has a storage unit
mm-hmm.
where he has an Airstream RV, a big ass Airstream RV that is just chock full of like weapons and valuables mm-hmm. and like art and all kinds of shit that he's taken as payment
yeah.
for what he does.
Yeah. There's an Action Comics number one in there that is mint condition, and I guess that comic book itself would be valued around $4 million.
Action Comics number one.
Yeah. That sound about right? That is nuts.
$4 million for Action Comics number one? Sounds about right. I know there's only a handful of them still out there.
Okay.
Hang on.
I mean, that's old. That's from the, like, 30s or something, isn't it?
Action Comics number one, 1938, first appearance of Superman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's about 100 copies of them still floating out there somewhere in varying like conditions. The one that has sold most recently sold for $3.25 million basically.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Who the hell has $3 million to spend on a comic book?
Wealthy people.
'Cause that just seems crazy.
Yeah, I can't say that I would ever spend $3 million. I love comics. I would never spend $3 million on one comic.
You don't even spend more than like 10, 20 bucks on something.
What do you, I mean, yeah.
That's just crazy. That's just crazy to me. Crazy.
I don't like paying cover price for shit. So why would, I mean, the collector part of me is long gone, I think. Like, when I was younger, I think I would have been more inclined to be like, I need this and I need it in mint condition, blah, 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 right? But now, it's like, first of all, where the fuck am I going to put it all, you know?
Right.
So don't get me wrong, we still have boxes of my comics over there, yes, right behind you. But like, it's not an ever-growing collection like it was when I was younger, you know? It's something that I will add to as I find stuff that I've been looking for. But there's so few that I'm still looking for. It's just, anyway, mm-hmm. anyway, back to the point here. There is one copy that is in what they call pristine condition. That one is the one that sold for like $3 million back
okay.
in 2014,
okay.
like 10 years ago.
Okay.
So I'm sure that one is still in good condition. I don't know if they're implying that this is that issue or that copy.
Yeah, because he had a lot of valuable stuff because there was yeah. like some baseball cards mm-hmm. and different comic books and, you know, the artwork. And
right.
so, like, there was a lot of money in that RV.
yeah, there was. So after he loads up on his weapons and gets some ammo and such, Christian hides Dana at an expensive hotel and then goes to Living Robotics to confront Rita. He currently suspects Rita is the embezzler. But when he gets there, she finds out she's dead. And that leads him to believe that Lamar is actually the one who embezzled the cash. He's the only family member still left and the only officer still alive for this company.
Now, he realized that it had to be Lamar or Rita. Did you say was her name?
Yeah.
Because he noticed that the money was getting put back. And so there was, it made him think of this fraud situation, which was a real situation that happened where somebody was, you know, taking money out, putting it back in, looking like there was a lot of cash flow because they were going to go public. And so it made it look like a healthier company. So that's what was happening, is they were putting it back now to make it look like there was a lot more revenues coming in.
Okay.
To inflate the prices when it did go public.
Manipulating the stock price.
Yes. Yeah, so that's what this whole embezzlement was doing here.
So it wasn't really embezzlement. It was basically stock fraud.
It's still fraud.
It is fraud. Yeah, absolutely.
You could still go to jail for this.
No, absolutely. It's just that that's not the name of it, you know?
Like, right.
It's not embezzlement. It was something else.
I think it was at first, because I think they were taking it out at first, but then, but I don't know because how long was the time period? I don't think it matters. It seemed like it was over a long time that it happened, because I think he looked at the last 10 years?
He looked at a decade's worth of information.
Yeah. So it was over the last 10 years it was out, and now recently it was starting to come back in.
Okay. Right. Whatever it was, it's still a no-no. You don't be doing that stuff. That's a
do not recommend.
Do not. One out of five stars, do not recommend.
Don't do it.
So while searching Christian's house, King reveals to Medina that he has been taking information from Christian for much of his career, and he asks Medina to carry on this partnership once King is retired. She can't get behind it, basically, because she's saying, like, look, I'm taking this information from a mass murderer. This is a dude that killed a lot of people, you know? Mm-hmm. So she can't really get behind that, but she ends up still taking a tip. She gets a tip from Christian's manager.
Yeah.
I don't know what the person is. What do you call that person?
Handler?
Yeah. Christian's handler. That sounds better. It sounds more official. She gets this tip from Christian's handler about the living robotics situation.
Mm-hmm.
Christian.
Let's go back just quick.
Yeah.
The reveal from Ray.
Yeah.
About this. What do you think about that?
It made me question the writers, because it doesn't make sense in the context of why they're going to the house to toss it,
mm-hmm.
why they're even searching for this person. If you had contextualized it by telling me that he is heading this up so that he can keep them off the trail of of his informant, then I could understand it. Mm-hmm. Then I could say, okay, this fits together better.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're in Christian's house. They're like looking around at like his backyard and like all the different equipment that he's got out there. And it's like, why are you doing this? Your motivation is not there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a reveal that makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes as little sense as Pamela Voorhees being the killer in Friday the 13th. We never knew her. We never saw her. She just pops up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like him popping up and being like, by the way, he's my informant.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Why are you here then?
Yeah. Now, I like this whole concept that he's kind of the guy behind Ray's career. But I do agree with you. I feel like why is he letting her go to this house then? They needed to explain that part a little better, but I like the reveal itself that, you know, he had this moment way back when where he was almost taken out
by Christian,
and he was spared because he's a good father.
Right.
Which obviously that tells me that Christian knows that his father was not a good father.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course. Yeah.
He
absolutely
knows that.
Yeah.
And so by allowing Ray to go on, you know, I think that's a big thing. I think that's a huge thing. Also, J.K. Simmons, who's so great in his little, I just love him. He's such a great actor. So
he really
as
is
he was
a good
doing
actor.
His lines and talking about being a good father, my gosh, so good. He's great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's definitely. Oh man. Again, Whiplash. You need to see Whiplash. It's such a good fucking movie. But it is. It's. Well, okay, I take that back. It's not a great fucking movie. It's a great fucking performance by J.K. Simmons. That dude turns in good work all the time.
I think I might have downloaded that to watch that at some point. So,
yeah. Definitely give it a watch. Yeah. No, I think the other thing that this does is like turning, making Christian from a dude who basically is committing tax fraud for people and a dude who is hunting down people and turning him into an informant so that he can be a good guy. It's like, man, you guys want this both ways, don't you?
He's all over the place because he's laundering money
for
bad guys.
Right.
So what is he tipping Ray off with?
I don't know.
Like if a bad guy doesn't pay up, is that who he turns in?
I have no idea. Like
we don't get that part.
Yeah, there's this like ambiguous like morality to this whole thing for him too, right? Like, and obviously, you know, everybody has their own morality, but I mean, you'd think that if Christian really wants to be a good guy, he could do that. There are ways you could do that without having to be the contract killer and an accountant. You know,
I think it's interesting, though, because he built this relationship with that guy in prison. I don't remember what that character's name was.
Yeah.
But he was more of a father figure and caring to Christian than his own father was. And so I feel like he was doing the money laundering because that's what that guy wanted him to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what he
did. That's the only reason why he's doing that. Yeah. But I do feel like he has this moral thing in there too, where he's like, I still need to do the right thing. And, you know, he might be one of those that has a hard time determining right from wrong on there too. It could be.
What do you mean?
Some people have a hard time telling the difference between right and wrong. Like if they're being taught, I feel like if he's being taught by this guy that this is okay to do this, he might not really understand how bad it is. But I feel like he's super smart, though, too. So maybe he should. I don't know. I don't understand how the minds work for people with Asperger's and stuff well enough to actually know how that is.
You're saying that some people with Asperger's and autism don't know right from wrong?
I've read that somewhere, and maybe I've read it in the wrong places. Mm. I don't know. But I feel like there's sometimes where it's hard for them to know that.
Okay. I don't know anything about it, so I'm not going to really approach that part of it because, again, I don't have the knowledge.
Right,
so.
Right.
Huh. Okay.
I'm just wondering if that's what's going on, or it maybe it's just bad storytelling. Like, they're not giving us the reasoning why he's doing stuff that's really wrong, but yet then turning people in.
Right.
Maybe he waits till he gets payment and then turns them in.
That would be an interesting twist. I would be down with that, but we don't get that information. Yeah. This is, again, stuff that maybe is on the cutting room floor.
Right.
I don't know.
Who knows? But, also, I want to bring up, too, real quick. I'm glad you brought up his tax fraud.
Yeah. Holy shit, dude. Like even I know that you don't just make this shit up. You know? I mean, like,
I understand he's trying to help this couple. And believe me, I have had people sitting in my office that my heart is breaking for them because they are just in an awful situation.
Yeah.
They have a lot of tax for whatever reason. I'm not going to get into specifics about things, but, and they are no longer in a situation to be able to pay those taxes.
Yeah.
I have had these situations and you feel bad for them, but I mean, he's just outright like having them put fraudulent stuff on the return that you can't put on the return.
Potentially getting them in deeper trouble.
Right. Like if if they audit this stuff, I mean, they could go to jail. They could go to jail, depending on the severity of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't think these guys are going to have severe enough for jail. They'll probably just get penalized and fined, but I don't think they'd end up in jail. But
it's not doing them any favors.
No,
though.
He's not.
That is not a favor.
He's not.
It looks like a favor to maybe somebody that doesn't necessarily know it, but that's not a favor. If you
and
get caught with that, you're going to get in trouble, guys. That's what
happens. He has the ability, like, because he could get in trouble, too, for filing this fraudulent return.
But he has the ability to
erase his name and go somewhere else and completely start over.
They don't.
They don't have that. So he'd be completely leaving them.
High and dry.
Yep. I still enjoyed the whole scene.
Yeah.
But I was like, ooh, man.
Did you enjoy it? Like, okay, story time. So when I was a kid, I grew up in Dover, Delaware. And when I went to the theater to see Wayne's World, there's a scene in Wayne's World where they have a blue screen or a green screen come behind them, and they're like walking through. They're like, mm-hmm. "Hey, I'm in New York. Let's go to Broadway. I got a gun," you know. And then they get to Delaware, and they're like, "Hi, I'm in Delaware," and the entire theater erupted. Yep. Erupted. They were like, "Fuck yeah, they named us. We are here. We arrived."
Yeah.
Is it like that, or is it?
It might be a little bit because, okay, right. You know.
Just because the accounting is on the screen, you're like, yeah, see, we matter. We're good.
Yeah, right? See, I think that could be a little bit of it because, like you said, on a big screen, mm-hmm. taxes and accounting are not exciting things to talk about.
Right.
But to have a little bit of it and be like, okay, I've sat across people and I've had conversations, not exactly like that, but right. to some kind of extent like that.
Right.
So it was like feeling a little representative on the screen a little bit for an accountant. So my little accountant nerd coming out. So
yeah, that Wayne's World thing is verifiable. Like you can talk to people that were in Delaware at the time.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it.
They were dissing us, but we didn't care. We were just like, fuck yeah, we're on the screen. We are here, man. We got here.
You were noticed finally because there's a lot of people that have no idea where Delaware is even at, you know?
Well, like, believe me, I know.
Yeah.
Anyway. The heck?
It's okay. I understand, honey.
Yeah. So anyway. So Christian heads to Lamar's mansion where he is faced with yet another team of hitmen, this time led by his brother Braxton, who was hired to protect Lamar. Christian and Braxton fight it out, but then they reconcile their differences through, you know, manly punching each other.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar shows up and he's like, hey, look, I took this money for good reasons, and these people are dead for good reasons, but mm-hmm. like Christian's not having any of that. So he ends up killing them.
I like that it's just like he doesn't even finish everything he's saying, and Christian's right. like, shut the fuck
stop.
Up and
just stop.
Just shoots him right in the head.
And Braxton doesn't even, like, flinch. He's like, he's heard it. Now he's like, this guy's an asshole. Just kill him.
But I think as soon as Braxton saw that it was Christian, he wasn't going to kill him.
No?
No, because he went out and stopped one of his guys from killing him.
True. That's true.
He wasn't going to kill him.
Well, he wasn't going to kill his brother, but he might have stopped his brother from killing his target.
Yeah, he might have tried to do that. But
I think at that point, I think once he realizes what a piece of shit Lamar is, that's when he's made the decision, nah, I'm going to let him, I'm gonna let him just off the guy. Yeah. So later at Harbor Neuroscience, a new family is visiting and they meet Justine, the daughter of the director of the clinic, who speaks by typing into a computer and having the words read by a female voice, the voice of Christian's handler.
I really like this. I like this because Christian was only at this place for what? An hour?
Yeah.
2 hours? Yeah. Maybe. But it meant something to him, mm-hmm. so much so that he gives all of his money, or a lot of his money.
He gives huge chunks of his money and huge chunks
to
of
this place to help other children.
He doesn't want other kids to end up where he was with his
right,
you know, an abusive
fuck of a father. This gal that helped him find that puzzle piece when he was there, you know, he works with her now.
Yep.
You know, I just really liked this because mm-hmm. while he had this bad upbringing, mm-hmm. he was able to still recognize that this was a good place and that this could help others. And he was going to do what he could to help others.
Yeah,
I love that.
Absolutely. So my problem with this is, like you said before, that he was only there for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
He formed enough of a bond with her that she was like, fuck yeah, I will help you hunt down people for money.
I don't know. And again, I'm going to go back to, I don't know. And I think everybody's different who are on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Some might be able to form bonds very quickly. Some might not be able to.
No, no.
I think it's all over the place.
I'm leaving autism out of this.
Yeah.
I'm not talking for autistic purposes. Mm-hmm. I'm talking just semantically. What made him go back to her and what made her say, okay.
Well, I'm wondering if it started...
She
more,
knew him for an hour.
More innocent, where they maybe they were just connecting and talking, and you know,
like,
they
hey
were
man,
just maybe texting
killer.
Each
Need
other
some
or something. And
yeah,
hey, you want a job?
Hey, old friend, I'm doing contract killing now.
Can,
I need somebody to be my
I need
handler.
A scheduler. Can you do that for
you
me?
Think you could handle that?
don't know.
Fuck yeah, let's murder some
I
people.
Understand what you're saying. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's a weird thing. Like, how did he approach her? Like, how did he come
that
up
That part,
her?
I like, get what like, you're saying. I like the fact that he was giving all this money to this place.
Yes, I agree. I 100% agree with that. That's really cool that he was doing that. But it's still just from a logistics perspective. Like, how, what made him think, you know who would be really good at this? You know who would be really good at this?
Well, yeah, because at that point, who,
you know that girl
well,
that
at
I
some
met
point,
in that neuroscience place 15 to 20 years ago, her, she would be really
right,
good at that. I'm going to call her.
At the point that they met, she wasn't verbal. She
still isn't verbal.
Right.
Well,
she could,
is, but not.
Right. Yeah. But he didn't know that
right.
she could. So he would have had to have gone back, maybe.
Figured
that out. Yeah, it's somewhere there's stuff we missed, but that's okay because I don't need to see all of that background because this is an action movie. I don't need to see all of that.
And I'm not saying it's impossible. It's entirely possible that he had already been doing contract stuff. He went there. He donated stuff. He started talking to her. She was like, how did you get all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely possible. I'm not saying it's an improbability. I'm just saying, like, how did it happen? And imagining doofusy ways and how
right,
in the
right.
way that it happened. We also learn later that Medina has accepted her role as Christian's new contact, and we get to see her like taking like the lead on the Treasury Department's investigation into the robotics place,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And then we also see later that Dana was gifted an original Jackson Pollock painting disguised as dogs playing poker, by the way, that she admired in Christian's Airstream RV when they were on the run, and we get to see Christian, who is on the road again, like Willie Nelson, heading to destinations unknown with his Airstream RV in tow. Now, question for you. If someone sent you a piece of art, even if it was just dogs playing poker, would your first instinct be to rip the fucking thing open and see what was really inside?
No, I thought that was weird, too, is like...
She's like, this can't be it, right? This motherfucker sent me dogs playing poker.
There's a little
Jackson Pollocks, man.
Yeah, she sees a little tear in it and something comes over her where maybe I just need to keep tearing this bigger. I don't know.
Maybe it's a reference to how she pulls at strings and he knew that she would pull at that string. You know what I mean? Like if he put that tear
maybe?
In there.
Maybe.
I think, you know what? Now that I think about it, I think I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Because she's the kind of person that would want to dig deeper, right?
Right.
So if she sees that there's a hole in it, she's going to be like, wait, why is there a hole in this? He's a very meticulous person. He wouldn't send me something with a hole in it.
Yeah.
And now we're on the case. Now she's opening it up and ripping it open and seeing that it's actually a Pollock.
Yeah.
Which way do you think is the right way is up for that Jackson Pollock painting?
I think it is. I think it is whoever owns it and is displaying it on their wall, however they want to do it, is the right side up.
I wonder if there is like an actual official, like apocryphal way to do it.
I'm sure the artist had something in mind when they made it, you know?
Yeah.
You could do whatever you want with the art. Like for example, my granddaughter loved to paint on canvases. Mm-hmm. And she painted this one canvas for my mom. And it has blue and pink and had a little splotch in the middle. Mm-hmm. And she gave it to my mom. Mm-hmm. And it had the blue on the upside and the pink on the bottom side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the little splotch in the middle.
Sure.
My mom had it framed. And when she flipped it over, it looked like a sunset with water and a boat in the middle of it. So my granddaughter painted it one way and had it interpreted that way.
Yeah.
But my mom displays it another way. So I'm just going to go with whoever owns it at the time can do what they want with it.
That's an interesting point. But counterpoint here, the artist has an interpretation of how that's supposed to look.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? They painted it in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not hanging it the way that they intended it, you are, quote unquote, to the artist, hanging it wrong, right?
Possibly. Depends on how the artist feels about that stuff, I think.
Right, right. But it's like that cartoon that you see on Facebook sometimes where there's like two people standing on the opposite ends of what looks like either a 6 or a 9. And one person saying 6, the other person saying 9. And they're saying, it depends on your perspective. And somebody crosses that out and they say, no, actually somebody wrote that specifically as either a 6 or a 9. And without the context behind it, you don't know if you're right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're just using your opinion.
Right.
So again, when it comes to art, you're using your opinion to inform how you want to hang it up, but you don't have the context of what the artist's version of mm-hmm. it was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting thing about art and an interesting interaction about art from the artist to the canvas and from the canvas to the consumer. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a really interesting thing to me about art and art interpretation. And it actually speaks volumes about how you can interpret mm-hmm. art, you know? Mm-hmm. I love that kind of shit. Love it.
Yeah.
Which is why no matter what I fucking say about a movie, you should always watch the movie and see it for yourself whether or not you're going to like it.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that several times yeah. where you've got your terminology with, you know, good movies, great movies, well-made mm-hmm. movies, all that stuff, but everybody needs to just if something interests you, just go watch it for yourself. Doesn't matter what we say or any other critics say or right. anything like that. Right. Everybody needs to just absorb it for themselves and make their own opinions.
Right, so. But I will still judge you if you think Rebel Moon is good. So
I've never seen
not
it,
you.
So.
I'm just saying you in general. I sit in silent.
Have
judgment.
You have you seen it?
I will never watch that movie.
Then you can't make an opinion on it.
I've seen plenty of Zack Snyder movies, and I know that
you
Batman
cannot. I'm sorry, sir. If you've never seen a movie
better than him.
You cannot give an opinion on it. You could say I don't want to see it because I don't think I'll like it, but you can't give an opinion if you've never seen it.
Did you hear me say it was good or bad?
No, but you said you'd judge people if they
I
liked
would.
It. But how do you know? What if you wouldn't? What if you watched it and you're like, oh my God, this is the best Zack Snyder movie I've ever seen?
I highly doubt it. The only
but
Zack
you don't
Snyder...
know that.
Okay. I go back to I never said whether it was good or bad. I only said I would judge a person who thinks that it is good. Okay. It's just like the people that are like, Justice League is the biggest superhero movie ever made. No.
I don't agree.
And I judge you. I deem you unworthy. Be gone.
Anyway. I do not judge them, but I do not agree. But I think we should maybe put that on. We should watch Rebel Moon sometime.
No, fuck that. I'm not watching that movie. I'm not watching Rebel Moon. Nope. Not interested. I sat through a 6.5-hour cut of Justice League.
I don't know why you did that.
And this man has the reins let loose by they don't care what he puts out. They don't give a shit what he puts on. That's like, they don't care what he puts on film. All they know is that the people that follow him will go wherever he goes.
Yeah, yeah.
They just want views. That's all they give a shit about.
Yeah.
They don't care if it's good. They don't care if it's actual art. I don't want to talk about Zack Snyder anymore.
All right,
because
you
are harshing my podcast mellow, lady.
Sorry. Yeah. Did we finish the story?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we did. He was happily ever after in his Airstream RV. Yep.
Yeah. Happily ever after. Until he's off to kill the next person. So. Do you have any additional notes that you wanted to
I have
talk
a couple
about?
Of things. Okay. So Anna Kendrick actually based the character on her mother, who is actually an accountant.
Weird.
And her mom went through the script with her and explained how the math worked to her, so she kind of had a better understanding of that. So that's kind of cute. All right. The only other thing I have is a little bit of alternate stuff. Do you have any other notes?
Yeah. I want to ask, can you get a P-10 as a convicted felon?
No.
Okay. So how is he doing taxes?
Because he's under a different name.
So he wasn't Christian Wolf when he was in the pen, but he's now Christian Wolf.
Right, because
so
he's
okay.
Yeah,
so it's okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So the other thing is that in my notes, I have one of my last notes on here is the beauty of that Pollock painting is that you decide which side is up.
Yeah.
Which we were talking about.
We did talk about that. Yeah. Yes.
So anyway. All right. So yeah, alternate casting. Let's hear it.
Now I don't know how close these actually were because this movie was on the. What is that list called where it's like a good script, but they haven't gotten it to production yet? Is it like Blacklist or something like that? Or?
The Blacklist is a list of scripts that are heavily favored by Hollywood producers that haven't been produced yet.
Okay, yeah. So this was on the Blacklist
it
for
was
a while.
On the Blacklist, okay.
Yep. And while it was being put around, different ideas floated around, mm-hmm. but the movie was originally envisioned to have Mel Gibson in the starring role with the Coen brothers directing. Which seems a little odd to me, but...
I could see the Coen brothers directing a movie like
that's,
this.
Yeah, that's fine, because I think the Coen brothers do a good job with whatever they work on.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But Mel Gibson in this role, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think Mel Gibson... Man,
Because he's older. I mean, this when did this come out? Like 2016?
2014. Yeah, it's 10 years old now.
God, this is 10 years old now? Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about Mel Gibson. The other one is Mel Gibson directing and Will Smith in the lead role.
I can see Will Smith doing this movie. I could see him doing this.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think he could pull it off. I don't know if Mel Gibson would be the right guy for this. I mean, he did do Braveheart.
Oh, he directed that?
Oh, yeah. He was the director for Braveheart. Mm. He did not write it, though. But I don't know. I don't know that I've seen much else that he's directed.
No.
You know? Like, I know Passion of the Christ is something that he directed, but I didn't see that movie.
I didn't watch that either.
I know he directed that Apocalypto movie, and a lot of people were gaga over it, but I didn't watch it.
I did not watch that either.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Mel Gibson would have been the right guy for it. I don't think Braveheart translates to this. Not that I mean that you have to have like the same set of skills for everything, but you know what I mean? Like
right.
I don't think that Braveheart is a natural lead in to this type of movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Any other
Nope, that's alternates? It. That's all I have that's for it. Notes. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's do our thing. What about a rating for this movie, Jennifer? Tell me why. Out of 5 stars, I should say.
I'm going to go with 3 stars on this one. It definitely has some flaws and a little plot holes and stuff like that. It's an action movie. They typically do have that just to kind of keep the pace going a little bit. But I enjoyed this movie still. Part of it I know is the accounting part of it for me. I get to see a little bit of that. So I liked the accounting stuff. I'm glad it wasn't over... powered in here because I do think it could get a little bit boring for people to, and I really enjoyed the action scenes in here. I mean, there was a scene where he's like kicking someone's ass with his belt.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I really enjoyed that stuff. I like the reunion with his brother at the end. Anna Kendrick, I'm a big fan of hers. I like most of the stuff that she's in. Mm-hmm. J.K. Simmons. Wonderful. Love
that
guy.
What haven't we said about J.K. Simmons?
Yeah, I know. I've talked about him a lot. But also, we didn't talk about him very much, but John Lithgow. He is another fantastic actor.
John
Lithgow
is
so good.
Treasure. That
like,
dude,
everything he's in, he's so good. So
well, you've seen the Apes movies, right? The newer Apes movies? Mm-hmm. He's in the first one of those. Mm-hmm. We're going to do those later, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll do them later this year. Yeah,
because there's a new Apes movie coming out.
Yeah. So I enjoyed the acting in the film. I thought the characters were pretty good. I think it's an interesting idea. I actually hope they come out with another one. I would love to see The Accountant 2.
There was talk about it, and it just hasn't gone anywhere yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I'd be all in on that. I would definitely go see that. So I'm going to go with a 3 just because there are some flaws. This isn't a perfect movie. It is an action movie, but I still really enjoyed it. I've probably seen this 3-4 times. Mm-hmm. So probably once every couple years, I'll throw this on and watch it. So
fair.
How about you?
I'm going to go 2.5, which is middle of the road. It's a perfectly watchable, enjoyable flick. There's nothing too terribly world-breakingly wrong with it, but it doesn't aspire to be anything more than what it really is, which is an action movie. And that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all, but I'm going to rate it as such because, you know, generally speaking, that's what I do. The like you said, the acting was competent in almost every case and excelled in several other cases. There are some plot holes that take me out of the movie. You know, like I was too busy thinking about why are they going after Christian while that whole thing was going on. So there could have been stuff in there that I missed because I was busy trying to figure it out, like putting the pieces together in my head. And I shouldn't have to do that. If you're going to show me a story, you need to tell me what's going on. You cannot assume that the audience is just going to put those pieces together. And I don't mean dumb it down. I mean, you have to give us that reason. He needs that motivation. He doesn't it just doesn't come out of a jar. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that for me was a tough row to hoe there for me with that. But I still though, perfectly competent action thriller type movie, middle of the road, 2.5 for me. So that's the end of season 2. And next week we're going to start season 3, which is the Cornetto trilogy.
Yes.
And we're going to have a guest on because Jen is getting way too flippin' busy to be sitting here yapping with me.
We're coming up on the deadline here, and I've pretty backlogged at work right now. Yeah. So I just need to step back and...
Yep. So we are going to have my old buddy Paul Moderman from the world famous Star Wars podcast that we did, Great Disturbances. That show, I mean, it was so popular that we had to shut it down because we couldn't keep up with it. With all the audience that we had on that show. I mean, everybody was just clamoring for our attention, and we couldn't handle it, so we had to shut it down. But we are going to risk that here and bring Paul in as a substitute. He will be playing the part of Jen for the next, 5 weeks? Because we're going to do season 3, which is the Cornetto trilogy, and then we're going to do a little two-off that we'll tell you more about
season
here.
Four,
a little bit in season
four. So he's going to cover season 3 and season 4.
He'll cover season 3 and season 4. Yep. And then Jen will be back after that for the aforementioned Apes movie.
Yes, it'll be after tax season. Woohoo!
So close. So close. 5 weeks ish away. All right, that's it for us this week. Next week we start the Cornetto trilogy with Shaun of the Dead. Thanks for listening, everybody.
You have been listening to A View from the Couch. Visit our new website, thecouchpod.com, where you will find a calendar of upcoming releases, links to our podcast episodes, and you can sign up for our upcoming newsletter. You can also email our host directly at view@thecouchpod.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Every review helps us get noticed. Thanks for listening.